Yeah, thanks for having me here. It's been a while, but it's good to be back. So I'm going to talk about this new work with Michael Levin and Daniel Renard and David Lin and Bowen Shi. I should note that most of the work was done by Daniel, but the author order was alphabetical because it was a bit mathematical. But so let me start. So the big goal, one thing that I'm like generally interested in is like quantum many body systems in some like low spatial dimensions, like one, like two or 3D. And I suppose like there are like two big questions that I myself is interested, but like other people are also interested, which is to find a, like basically classify all possible quantum phases. And in, let's say, in 2D, like 3D, maybe it's also interesting to think about gapless systems. But for now, I'll just think about gap ground states. And also another goal would be to like find and like, let's say, efficient like numerical method for studying these many body ground states. And today, the topic that I want to discuss will be related to this first one, finding the invariants that characterize many body quantum phases. Oh, by the way, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask. What do we mean by topological invariance? It's very well known that there is a very intimate relationship between many-body physics and topology. One of the first and very famous example of this is the quantized quantum Hall conductance, famously given to related to many Nobel Prizes. And it states that if you have an electron gas in a magnetic field, and if you measure the electrical conductance, that value is quantized. It's more specifically some constant, the von Klitzing constant, times some number, which is a numerical number. And remarkably, this number is very well approximated by a rational number, where Q and P are some reasonably small integers, like 2, like 3, or 5, or 1. So that's a very remarkable fact because like this quantized value is like insensitive to small perturbations, including like disorders and like very generic perturbations, as long as you don't close the spectral gap of the system. More recently, over the past two decades, like one of the overarching themes in this line of research was to understand topological invariance from the entanglement of the ground states. And probably one of the first and most famous example in this direction is known as topological entanglement entropy. What it says is the following. So suppose you have a two-dimensional quantum many-body system. So you have like a bunch of, let's say, electrons or spins or something like that. And then you can calculate the entanglement entropy of some subregion, let's say A, which consists of like many degrees of freedom, such that the size of the system is like sufficiently large compared to the correlation lengths. Then it's believed that, first of all, that it will satisfy an area law, which is not proven rigorously, but it's like believed to be true if the underlying ground state is gapped. And moreover, it is expected that there is a subleading contribution, gamma, written as gamma here, which is called as topological entanglement entropy. And when it first came out, people believed, and still to this day, many people believe that this is an invariant in a sense that even if you add like small perturbations to the system, this like a subleading contribution will be preserved, even though this like leading contribution will be sensitive to the microscopic details. So that's a very famous result. So what does it mean for this like quantity to be invariant? Generally speaking, when we consider a many-body quantum system, we're implicitly thinking about some kind of equivalence relations between a like a family of Hamiltonians in the thermodynamic limit. And we say that, let's say we have two like local Hamiltonians. By local, I mean like a 2D local in this context. So like each terms of the Hamiltonian is either supported on some like ball of constant size radius, or like it has some non-local contributions, but the interaction strength like decays very fast in terms of the radius of the interaction, maybe like super polynomially. And if there is an adiabatic path between these two Hamiltonians, such that the gap between the ground state and the first excited is bounded from below throughout this path, then we say that H and H prime are in the same phase. And one of the main objectives of studies like this is to understand some kind of quantity which is invariant under this path. And if you can find such an invariant, then you can use those invariants to say that, let's say, phase, like a ground state of Hamiltonian H1 is in a different phase from the ground state of Hamiltonian, let's say, H2. One nice thing that happens when you have like two Hamiltonians in the same phase is that then there exists some like a quasi-local unitary transformation that maps like one ground state to the other. More specifically, what Hastings showed and also Tobias Osborne showed was that if there's a uniform lower bound on the gap along the path between two Hamiltonians, there's a unitary transformation which can be generated by some Hermitian operator DS. The details about this Hermitian operator is not important, but what's important is that it's roughly a sum of locally interacting terms. So you can plausibly believe that if you solve this differential equation, you will have some unitary that is generated by some time-dependent local Hamiltonian. So that is expected to preserve some kind of notion of locality. This is known as the quasi-adiabatic continuation. So in principle, if you want to show that some quantity is an invariant of the phase, what you need to show is that that quantity is something that remains unchanged under these quasi-adiabatic continuation in some appropriate limit.
Sorry, what does quasi-local unitary mean?
Oh yeah, it just means that, it's a good question. So. Let's just say that it's a unitary generated by a sum of local terms or local terms with maybe super polynomially decaying tail. And the important property is that if you for each local region, this global unitary can be approximated by some low depth circuit.
But isn't that just a local unitary?
There are some tails, exponentially decaying tails. So it's not exactly strictly local unitary, but it's related. But this is leading to an important point. So oftentimes, practically speaking, what people work with is not exactly the quasi-adiabatic continuation, but a simplified model, which is just a constant depth quantum circuit, whose depth is independent of the system size. So here's an example of a constant depth circuit in 1D. So you have gates in nearest neighbor, and you apply them in three steps. And this number three would remain unchanged in the thermodynamic limit. And in the 2D case, analogous thing to do is that you have apply some gates over these constant size regions, these red regions. So that will constitute as a single layer of this a quantum circuit. And maybe in the next layer, you would do, So in the next layer, you would apply some unitaries applied on these things, and you can iterate this constant number of times, independent of the system size. So obviously, if you have a constant depth unitary that automatically defines a family, a one-parameter family of Hamiltonian from let's say your beginning Hamiltonian to another Hamiltonian, because you can just conjugate your local Hamiltonian by this unitary. And it's trivial to see that this unitary, there will be a pass that connects from the identity to this low depth unitary. So that defines, so the adiabatic evolution, this constant depth circuit is just a special case of some adiabatic evolution. One can see that an invariant of a phase must be invariant at the very least under these constant depth quantum circuits. So that's an absolutely necessary condition for the invariant to be a true invariant. But in practice, I can't say this with full generality, but for all intents and purposes, if somebody comes up with an argument saying that some quantity is invariant under a finite depth circuit, it's usually not that hard to upgrade that to a statement about some quasi-local unitaries, because you just need to bound the tails, which often case can be done. So that's why in this talk I want to focus on this like particular like constant depth unitary, even though I'm interested in the establishing invariance of the phase. Okay, so coming back to this slide, I said that people believed that this subleading contribution to the entanglement entropy was a invariant of the phase. So what that really means is that people expected this quantity to be invariant under like a finite depth quantum circuit at the very least. Unfortunately, actually, so I'll get to that. And this is important because you can actually compute these quantities in various systems. And indeed, Roger's not here, but like this is like one of the earlier like papers that actually computed topological entanglement entropy in non like fine-tuned systems. And one of it was a very interesting result because the predicted value of topological entanglement entropy from topological quantum field theory was like 2 log 2. And you could calculate this using like quantum Monte Carlo. And indeed, you got the result that was close to 2 log 2. So that was like a very strong evidence that this underlying microscopic system is actually like it has a topological order. And since then, like there were like many works in this direction. So you just compute the topological entanglement entropy, and if it's like non-zero value, and it's close to the predicted value, then that was like a good indication that this was a topological order system, in particular, different from a trivial phase. But soon, already around, I think 2007 or 2008, like Sergei Bravi realized that there was a problem. Unfortunately, he didn't really write a paper about this, but there are many follow-up works. And what he found was that this quantity is actually not quite an invariant of phase. And this is known, this contribution, which is not really universal, is called as the spurious topological entanglement entropy. And the setup is very simple. So suppose you have like a 2D system, and like behind the scene, like over all these subsystems, you have some like spins or fermions, like many of them. And according to these papers, if you take the linear combination of these entanglement entropies, this like leading non-universal term should cancel out each other, and you should be only left with the universal term, which is supposed to be an invariant of the phase. But what Sergei realized was that you can consider a simple model like this. So this is what's known as the 1D cluster state. And the way you should think about this is that behind the scene, there are many like spins which form some ground state. But on top of that, on the second layer, you're introducing some extra spin degrees of freedom. And you are introducing these like stabilizer constraints like XEX, XEX, XEX. So that's a very simple, like a quasi 1D ground state. And you can calculate the entanglement entropy exactly. And when you calculate that, like even if this background state over these like spin degrees, even the degrees of freedom that I didn't draw, even if they are in the product state, by adding in this like extra like quasi 1D system, you get this contribution of like log 2, which is not zero. So, okay, so that's just a fact about this particular model. But why is that relevant? It's relevant because there's a adiabatic path that connects the ground state of this like quasi 1D system to a from a trivial product state. It's because this state is known as the cluster state, and this is a short-range entangled state in a sense that you can, in this case, create the state by like applying two layers of like commuting like CZ gates. And because you can create this state using like a depth two circuit, this is just supposed to be in the same phase with the trivial phase, namely just the product state. So then we run into this tension because this contribution, this linear combination of entanglement entropy was supposed to be zero if you're in the trivial phase, but by simply adding in this like extra degrees of freedom and creating some short-range entangled state, you could actually move away from this like a value of zero. So this was pointed out first by Sergey Bravi, and then many people extended this construction to like a, so that it looks like less like fine-tuned like this. Like it's like, for example, now we know like examples of this spurious contribution wherein the underlying system has some like translational invariance and such.
But why can't one just demand like to take the sizes of A, B, and C to be very big?
Oh yeah, it's a good point. So for this construction, you can just do that. But there are some translationally invariant examples where you get violation at all scales, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I think it was a 2D cluster state. Yeah, so it's you can't just like remove them by like going to like arbitrarily large scale. Yeah.
Sorry, what is the fine tuning in this example?
The fine-tuning, oh, right, so I guess, obviously, if I move my regions to be away from this these qubits, I guess there won't be any spurious contribution.
I see.
But, so one might say, oh, maybe there's some, like, bad region in almost all regions you don't have this problem, but, there are, like, translationally invariant models, and, it just happens everywhere and at L scales. Yeah. So this is an issue because what this shows is that the topological entanglement entropy is not a, like a true invariant in the strictest sense. And if you compute the topological entanglement entropy and you get like log 2, like what does it actually mean? Because it could have actually come from this like spurious contribution. And the underlying phase is actually just like a trivial phase. And another like related question is there actually an invariant definition of topological entanglement entropy, like which actually extracts the data that we thought, data that we actually wanted? So those are the questions that motivated this work. So I think we like essentially solved this problem. We can't, first of all, so I'm going to state the main result, but what this spurious contribution shows is that you can't, there has to be some condition, right? So like if you don't have any conditions, you can just add in these like spurious contributions, and it looks like just anything can happen. So we have to start with some like nice states that we have a good handle on. And then we can only say what happens if we like perturb these like nice states away from this desirable starting points. So over here, I drew like different like versions of like A, B, and C. Clearly they're all just different regions. But one common thing that they have is that topologically speaking, this is equivalent to that, which is equivalent to that, meaning that you can deform the subsystems. So that while maintaining the topology of these regions A, B, B, C, and B, and A, B, C, and you can transform this into that and also into that. So the assumption is that as long as you preserve the topology, this linear combination of entanglement entropy, which is supposed to be like 2 gamma 0, where gamma 0 is the topology and entanglement entropy, it is a constant. So that's our starting point. So suppose we start with some wave function which satisfies this. Okay. And to be clear, there are like concrete examples for which you can verify that this is actually true. These are known as like so-called like a fixed point wave functions of some like renormalization group flow. Those words, you don't really need to care about that. What's important is that they're like concrete examples. So once you start with that, the key result is that if you apply perturbation, then you always get a lower bound. So it should be noted that if you apply perturbation, you can change this linear combination of entanglement entropies because of this examples of spurious entanglement, topological entanglement entropy. So you cannot really establish an equality here. That's just impossible. But what is true is that you always get this like lower bound. So you can like never get like below this quantity. So that's the main result.
Question.
Yeah.
I think in some of the previous papers with the examples of spurious contributions, you could choose different subregions, ABC, but maintain the topology. It's possible to change that value.
So you can change the value, but that value has to be always non-negative. So it can never be negative. That's what we proved.
I mean, I'm talking about the assumption. I'm saying in those papers, there are examples where we change the topology of subregions A, B, and C, but keep the topology. Quantity is not a constant.
I think for these wave functions, that's true. But like if you have like a cluster state, this assumption will be not true. So for those starting points, we can't say much actually. But like the way I think about those things is that there's just perturbation of like some trivial product state. So if you view it that way, whatever you get, it has to be. I guess in that case, the statement becomes sort of trivial because this linear combination has to be always non-negative and the gamma zero is zero. So this inequality just becomes conditional information must be larger or equal to zero, which is that's true for all quantum states. So it's not very interesting. But I think that's the way I would think about this.
So that means if I check topological entanglement entropy for this topology, like every possible shape of this topology, then in principle we know it is topologically ordered.
Given wave function, you can just do that. But it turns out that in some sense, checking like so this is shown in this work, but checking some local conditions, it suffices to like verify this condition by using like linear number of constraints in the system size. It's not totally obvious why, but you can show that. So it's not like So I don't think this will be very practical, but like if you really want to verify this condition on in your lab, you just need to check some conditions on some reduced density matrices everywhere, on overbounded regions. Yeah.
So just to make sure I'm following, so the cluster state breaks this nice state.
Breaks the assumption. Yes.
Breaks the topology.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So this in that case this can be zero.
The gamma zero has to be always non-negative, and in that case, one way to say it is that for the cluster state example, this our result just doesn't apply because the premise was not satisfied. The other perspective is that cluster state example is a perturbation of like the product state, in which case it does apply, except the result is not very interesting because
same as for the product state.
Yeah. Right.
So for chiral topological order, then you cannot say anything about it?
It doesn't really depend on that. Oh, okay. So maybe in chiral topological order, this won't be an exact constant. So like the correlation length cannot be like zero. So that said, like I'm pretty sure that when all the dust settles, like it'll go through. The argument itself, it just assumed that this is a constant. So short answer is I think it will go through, but we'll need to like massage our proofs a little bit. Yeah. And one little bonus is that, we do have a invariant definition of topological entanglement entropy, not very useful one, but the idea is very simple. So if you start from a fixed point wave function and there's some like perturbation, you just like, because this quantity is guaranteed to be always lower bounded by two gamma zero, you just need to apply a disentangling circuit that like kills this like perturbation. And you might be worried that, what if I like overdo it and in the process, like add in some like extra like perturbations, Well, so that's why we have this like minimization condition. So you just minimize it, and that should approach like 2 gamma 0. Yeah. So I guess like the two things that we get out of this is that at the very, so we can sort of say something concrete when somebody calculates the topology containing entropy. So well, for example, if you calculated and that's zero, then like there's just no like topological order, like period. So that's just gone. And in fact, like let's say topological containing entropy is like some small number, like 0.2 or something. And there's no anion theory which is consistent with that. Like all the anion theories that we know has to be like a, have a topological entanglement entropy strictly larger than 0.2. So that would be also like even though there might be spurious contribution, that can still never be topologically ordered. But of course there are some restrictions. So like let's say topological entanglement entropy is larger than log 2. Well, maybe there is a topological order or not because there could still be spurious contribution. Okay, so what I want to do in the rest of the talk is to explain the idea. So it turns out the argument is actually quite simple if we consider some specific examples, like the well-known toric code example. It gets more involved if we consider like more general cases. So I would go through this like specific example first, and then if I have time, I'll talk about this general case as well. And there are really three key insights. I'll go through them one by one. So yeah, here's a case study, the toric code. I think most of you would know this, but in case you don't, it's a like a very well-known example of like a 2D topological order. It's defined as a subspace spanned by like two stabilizer constraints, these XXXX and ZZZZ. You can think of it as like a ground state of this local Hamiltonian, whose Hamiltonian is some of these like X types and the Z types. And if you know toric code, you also know that there's these thing called like string operators. So for example, if you apply like a Z, 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 Z along this like a path, then at the end of this path, you create like excitations, which I represented by this like red dots. And similarly, if you apply X, 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 at the end, you have this excitation. And using this, you can, you know, create anions and move them around, do all sorts of fun things. So I will get to the details that we use about the toric code later, but for now, I will first try to simplify our problem. So remember, like, what we ultimately wanted to do was the following. So this quantity, in the absence of perturbation, is supposed to be 2 times the topological entanglement entropy. And what we want to know is what happens if we apply a unitary to this like underlying state. And what I want to do is that I want to like make this unitary a little bit simpler. More specifically, I want to make it in a like a I want it to demand that it has a specific structure. And what I want to show is that no matter what kind of unitary you started with, you can always reduce the problem to this like specific unitary with a structure. So what's the idea? It's very simple. So generally speaking, let's say you are interested in calculating the entanglement entropy of a region, let's say A, then if you only apply a unitary that is like strictly inside of A or like strictly outside of A, that's not going to really change the entanglement. So if you have a circuit like this, so the blue circuits are blue are the gates that we're actually applying, the entanglement entropy that you calculate on the left-hand side will be equal to the entanglement entropy that you calculate on the right-hand side. Because like what you're basically doing is that, for example, this unit, this gate, it acts only inside of A. So like that's not going to really change the entanglement. So I removed that. That's why I have this like white color here, which means that I'm not really applying the gate. And you can just repeatedly remove these like gates one by one until you're left with these gates, which are like kind of at the boundary. So you can't quite remove them. So after you remove some of the gates in this, you can remove some of the gates in this blue region. By the way, so I should have mentioned the blue region, it just means that I'm applying the unitary. And so after you remove that, you can, you know, remove some unitaries like here and also on the outside. But more importantly, you can remove some unitaries that are in the interior of this region, because So that's what I'm gonna do. And you might ask, like, why didn't I do anything to like this B and C part? Well, I could have done it, but it doesn't really help me. So I just wanted to simplify it. So hopefully at this point, everything is clear. And then here's an interesting fact. So I established that this linear combination of entanglement entropy that leads to the putative topological entanglement entropy remains unchanged under change of this circuit from the left to the right. And now that we have this reduced circuit, we can ask the following thing. So now I want to restrict this region A into like a smaller region. Let's call it as like A prime. And I want to make it such that the gates over here and the gates over here are like strictly outside of A prime. And what happens then is that there's this famous inequality, strong subadditivity, which says that if you have this linear combination, like if you restrict A or C to like a smaller subsystem, that linear combination like never increases. Like if it changes, it has to decrease. So you can get this expression. But the thing is, well, at this point, we can apply this trick of removing the gates one more time, because from the perspective of A prime, B, and C, the gates over this region and the gates over this region, they're just outside the region. So you can remove them as well without changing the entanglement entropy whatsoever. So after all this work, what we realize is that even if you started with this like arbitrary, like a low depth quantum circuit, when it comes down to calculating the entanglement entropy, this quantity is lower bounded by the topological entanglement entropy with respect to this reduced circuit that only acts on this B and C region. And it's like a slight thickened version of that. So that's one major simplification. And with all also generality, because we didn't assume anything about the circuit aside from the fact that this is a low depth circuit, we can always assume that the circuit that we're applying is of this form. It just acts on these like B and C, and it's like a slightly thickened region. And the next thing that we can do is that, okay, I can just like rewrite this expression for entanglement entropy. So the first line is just a definition of the condition of mutual information, nothing fancy there. And in the second line, what I'm just doing is that I'm just rewriting this in a slightly different way. So I'm just gonna think about some state lambda. It'll be generally different from this like underlying state sigma. But all that I'm going to demand is that this lambda and sigma, they are indistinguishable over AB and BC. Okay, and as long as that's true, the entanglement entropy of like sigma and entanglement entropy of entanglement entropy of sigma and lambda over AB and BC, they will be just like identical by definition. So we end up having this condition of mutual information plus the entropy difference between lambda and sigma. So what does that give us? Because of the strong subadditivity, this quantity is always non-zero. So in terms of lower bound, what we get is simply the entropy difference between lambda and sigma over this region ABC. And when it comes down to the toric code, the remaining argument is super simple, actually. What you would do, so notice that all I demanded from lambda was that it is indistinguishable from sigma over A, B, and B, C.
What does lambda?
So yeah, I haven't specified it, but I'm only demanding that it satisfies two conditions, that it's indistinguishable over this underlying state over these two regions, like AB and like BC. And the important thing is that these AB and BC regions, they don't complete a loop. So it's just topologically a disk. So you won't be able to, yeah. And I just want to demand that they're indistinguishable over those regions. But it could be that they are distinguishable over AB and C. And here's the point at which we should think about the underlying physics behind the system. Because there's a very simple way to create such a lambda, which is not exactly equal to sigma, but nevertheless locally indistinguishable from sigma. So how do you do that? Well, starting from a state sigma, you can simply apply a string operator that creates an anion inside and the anion outside of this annulus. And this anion, like if you're away from the anion, unless you make a loop around the anion by doing some interferometric experiment, you can never tell whether the anion is there. So if you're only restricted to experiments on like AB or like BC, then no matter how hard you try, you won't be able to tell whether there is an anion here or not. But if you have access to the entire ABC, then you can just apply a string operator here. And depending on what kind of anion you have inside, you're going to get a different phase. So you will be able to distinguish the case in which you have an anion or not, and even like different types of anions. And we could, for example, choose this U to be like a string operator, like which is a tensor product of Z or like a tensor product of X's. And the important thing is, in the toric code, the important word here is the tensor product. The unitary is just Z, 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 right? Or X, 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 X. And that's, it's a tensor product of unitary in the interior on the annulus and its complement. And whenever you apply unitary like that, you don't change the entropy at all. Okay, so that's why for the toric code example, even after you apply the unitary, the underlying entanglement entropy itself remains unchanged, even though you get a different state. So what you can do is that then without loss of generality, I can choose like lambda to be of this form where UIs are just like some string operator that I can choose. So I guess in case one, I guess there are like four possibilities. One, you don't apply a string operator. Two, you apply this like X type operator or Z type operator, or you apply both X and Z. So there are like total of four possibilities. And because all those states are orthogonal to each other, you can actually evaluate this quantity exactly. And this like non-universal contribution of entropy of sigma prime, they all get canceled out. And you're only left with this contribution that depends on the probability distribution that you choose. And it's a very simple maximization. So this holds true for any probability distribution. So the best bound that you're going to get is by choosing p's to be all like 1/4. So let's see. So by choosing the best possible pi, you're going to get 2 log 2. And that's it turns out that this is equal to 2 gamma 0. So that's the argument for the toric code.
So can you show on this diagram what the support of sigma prime and lambda are and how they?
Yeah, so sigma is the global state, underlying global state. So it's like defined on the entire lattice, like not just this annulus, but the, let's say this is my lattice. Like sigma is on this like entire lattice. And U prime is this like unitary on the blue region. Yeah, so a sigma prime is still this some state on the global lattice. And I guess then, yeah, so, but at the end of the day, we're looking at the sigma prime on ABC. And I guess the important thing is these UIs, it's a tensor product, it is a tensor product unitary between like A and its complement. So that's why it doesn't change the entanglement entropy.
Here, do you require the best of U to be constant?
That's not necessary actually. But for the toric code, in this argument, it's absolutely essential that the depth is 1 actually. and it's a tensor product structure between A and its complement. So that's what we needed in this toric code case. But I should emphasize that that's not important, but it's just that in the toric code case, it's just the argument is super simple. Yeah.
So in other cases, what complications?
That's a great question, because there is an issue. Yeah. So generally, there can be like non-abelian enum models. And in this case, it's just like impossible to have a string operator in like a constant depth period. So I don't know what the like who first figured this out. I heard it from Benny first, but I couldn't find any like original references for this argument. But anyway, the point is
this paper by Daniel and Gottesman.
I see. Oh, this like very old paper.
Yeah.
I see.
No abelian enum could superluminal.
Right. Oh, I see. Good. So. Anyway, the point is, for non-abelian enums, you need like extensive depths. So like this is just not going to be possible, period. And in particular, for explicit models, what you can verify is that this equality is generally not even true. You might have hoped that maybe secretly this equality is true even for non-abelian enum models, but actually, for some cases, this won't be true. So. You need a different kind of argument.
Sorry, why does this imply that it's not true?
It doesn't mean that the other is not true, but I'm just saying that this argument does not go through. First of all,
Why does the depth of creating the string operator matters here?
Oh, because like if you have like a depth 2 like unitary, for example, like the string operator may have like supports like over here and like here, right? So, and you can't, in that case, you can no longer say that the entanglement entropy remains unchanged under the string operator. And that was somehow important here. Yeah. Right. So that's an issue. Fortunately, it's not a huge issue because if you think about it, the first step of the proof, which was just restricting your unitary, didn't really depend on a string operator. So that part is still safe. And the second part of this proof, which like basically lower bounded this like topological entanglement entropy in terms of the entropy difference, that also doesn't use any string operator. So that part is also safe. It's really just the third part that somehow we need to fix. And that's really like where the majority of our effort has been going on in the paper. And there are some like pretty like interesting like facts which are sort of like independent of this work. So I would like to give you like an overview of this idea. So the key question is you can come up with lambda which is indistinguishable from sigma over these A, B, and B, C region, but like how do you come up with it? Yeah. So and at the end of the day, this like lower bounds the quantity that we want. So presumably we want lambda to have like as much entropy as possible in some sense, because that will give us the best bound. But how do you still choose it? It turns out that I can motivate you in a different way, but like one reasonable way to think about this is that you simply, first of all, you gotta like ensure that this condition is satisfied, the local indistinguishability. So how do you do that? Well, you can just simply consider like a you can simply consider like a density matrix which is like indistinguishable from sigma over like a slightly larger region, the past light cone of like the A, B, and B, C region, and then you can just try to like choose the like a maximum entropy state possible subject to this constraint. So you can certainly define such a state because as long as you have some linear constraints, you can define a max entropy state. That's not an issue. But obviously, there are two difficulties. One is that we can choose a maximum entropy state, but what is its entropy actually? So like solving this maximization problem is very difficult in general. And the second thing is, like at the end of the day, we're applying this circuit on this like blue region. So how do you actually deal with that? Like, how can you solve this maximization problem in the presence of this circuit that we don't actually know, aside from the fact that it's a low depth circuit?
So what's the difference between sigma prime and sigma?
Let's see. Oh, good. So sigma prime, yeah, maybe I should have said that. So sigma prime is u prime sigma u prime dagger. So sigma is the original state without the circuit, and sigma prime is after applying the circuit, supported on this blue region. Yeah. So if you start with the lambda, which is indistinguishable from sigma over these like enlarged regions, so as to include the past light cone, then you apply u prime, and then you can automatically guarantee that this condition is satisfied.
So yeah. The maximization is also over this choice of u prime?
No, so that is fixed. So that's just like given to you. You can't control it. That's a perturbation.
Okay.
You can only choose like lambda, like on this side.
But I thought you wanted to prove it for some family of perturbations or something.
But what we want to show is that for any such perturbation, we have some like bound. So we don't get to like choose this like u, because we want to say no matter what u prime is, as long as it's a low depth circuit, we get some bound.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and it's only the lambda that we get to like choose in whatever way we want, because that's like the parameter that we can choose to get the lower bound.
Yeah. I have a nice question.
Yeah.
Whenever we apply unit ray, it's a reversible process, right? So this entropy of sigma prime should always be the same as entropy of sigma, because it's a reversible change.
Let's see. So the global entropy should be the same, but the So at the end of the day, we're interested in the quantity that lower bounds is the entropy of the region ABC, mm-hmm. And because we're applying a circuit that acts both like inside and outside of ABC at the same time. The entropy can change,
okay.
Actually. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. So it turns out that there's a pretty general fact, which is kind of interesting on its own, that allows us to solve this problem. And it's the fact that there's a sense in which this maximum entropy state, like before applying the circuit, so I'm going to deal with that later, is like canonical. So what I mean by that is that, you know, let's say I have some annulus like this. I can partition it into like A prime, B prime, C prime, and I can just define lambda to be the max entropy state consistent with these like linear constraints. And then I can have another partition. You see that B double prime is smaller than B prime, yeah? It's the same annulus, but just partitioned in a different way. I can define another max entropy state. I'm going to call it as tau. Sorry, this should be tau. Which satisfy this constraint. In general, like there's no reason why lambda and tau should be the same, because it's just like mathematically these are like different constraints. But it turns out that what one can show is that lambda is actually equal to tau in for the class of states that we considered. This like class of states for which the topological entanglement entropy is a constant for like any like topologically equivalent set of subsystems. So I can tell you more about that if you're curious. But that's just a fact that I'm going to assume is true. It's something that. So why is it interesting? It's interesting because there's just another like very general fact about like quantum Markov chains. So let's say imagine you have like a chain of like 1D systems. Like think of these as like spins or something. And very generally speaking, it turns out that these like two stamens are equivalent. So let's say you partition this entire chain into like A, B, and C, all of which are like some contiguous like subsystems. And if that's the case, let's say that condition mismatch information is just a constant. That is actually equivalent to saying that if you look at the strict sub-intervals, then you always get a zero condition mismatch information. So why is that relevant? It's because, you know, in our assumption, we assume that this topological entanglement entropy is like is a topological invariant. So like think of it this way. So this A part here is the like the first spin here, and the C is like this like last spin over here. And I get to choose like B in like whatever I want in the middle. And our assumption says that no matter how you like deform that, you're always going to get the same topological entropy. So you can see that our assumption is directly related to this like the first condition that you have a constant condition of interformation, however you like smoothly deform the partition. So
what does it mean by ABC does not partition the chain?
Yeah, so like this will be an example in which A, B, and C does not partition the chain, because you have like one spin that is left over, but if you partition, if you have like this A, B, and C, like A prime, B prime, and C prime, that will be like a true partition of this entire system. Yeah.
So in the second statement, A, B, and C are still regions which are like separate.
Yeah, they have to be like contiguous intervals.
And A and C are only connected by.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, you can't have like something in the middle. Actually, I think that still works, but I think it is implied, but I don't know about the reverse directions. Yeah. Yeah. So why is that helpful? It's because for any such. So if you start with those that kind of state, it turns out that you can define a max entropy state that is consistent with these marginal density matrices. And it turns out that this is just another fact that is like completely independent of our setup. That maximum entropy state is just independent of these like regions ABC, like as long as you like keep this like interval rule.
If I just cut the A into two parts, you mean that then the IAB will be zero?
Cut A into like...
Cut the orange A.
Yeah, like this, yeah.
Then I use the like A right
as
a new A, then you mean A, say B, IAB will be zero?
That will be... So with respect to this like maximum entropy state... with respect to the maximum entropy, not with respect to the original state.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an important thing. So this max entropy state is like really nice. So like no matter how you define it, it's always the same in this context at the very least. And moreover, it's not often the case that you can just solve the maximization problem like analytically, like exactly. But in this case, you just have a solution, and the solution, the max entropy state is just a linear combination of the entanglement entropies of the subsystems. So. This is why we can actually solve the maximization problem, at least when we didn't apply the circuit. So viewing it this way, we see that this entropy difference is actually just exactly equal to the condition of information, which is equal to 2 times the topological entanglement entropy, at least before the circuit. Of course, this is just part of the problem, because in reality, we actually applied a circuit that we didn't know. Yeah? It's some like mystery circuit, and we need to argue that you essentially get the same result, even if you don't, as long as that circuit is like low depths. Yeah, so that's the key issue. One immediate thing that you can see is that, one immediate thing that you can see is that, if you remember the trick that I mentioned, namely like removing some of the gates like this, you can remove some of the gates in the interior of this annulus, provided the annulus is sufficiently thick, and then you will be left with some gates on this boundary regions. Okay. And still, like, we didn't completely remove the gates, but now we finally can actually relate the entropy of the states before applying the unitaries and entropy of states like after applying the unitary. And here's again like a very general fact. So suppose you have like a bipartite quantum states like P and let's say P and Q, which are indistinguishable over a P and Q. So the way you should think about this is that I have an annulus, and I have I'm defining like two states on the annulus, and I'm partitioning the annulus into like P and Q part, and they are like indistinguishable over this like P and Q part. So you can think of like a one state as a case in which you have like a no anion inside, and the other is the case in which you have some anion inside, and they will be like indistinguishable over a P and Q. And now suppose you apply some like channel only to Q, okay? So only this region, yeah? And if you can, in some sense, if that channel is like reversible, so for that channel R, if there's some like procedure that gets back you the original state T, then it turns out that the entropy difference between the two states is always preserved. So that's a general fact. So assuming that you accept that this fact, our goal then is to somehow, starting with this kind of state, the state in which we apply the unitary, we want to get a state in which we don't have the unitary and go back. So if we can like create that cycle, all in terms of quantum channels, then we can invoke this entropy difference lemma and relate the entropy difference prior to applying a circuit to the entropy difference like after applying the circuit. And just for the visualization's sake, I'm gonna just regroup the sites so that, you know, this is topologically a ball. This is also a topologically a ball. So imagine I just like zoom up this region and like zoom out this region. So this region actually looks like that, and that region looks like this, just for visualization purpose. And with this like nicer graphic, it's clear what our goal should be. We want to start with two states acting on this like P and Q, which is obtained by after applying this unitary on these two balls. And we want to somehow like apply a quantum channel, so we get some state on this that essentially doesn't have any unitaries. And we want to go from here to here, but also we want to be able to go back. So how does that work? Well, the first step is just like removing the gate is easy. You just take the partial trace, because you apply a partial unitary on some region, and then you apply a partial trace on that region. The unitaries you can use the cyclicity of the trace to just like remove them. So I'm gonna trace. So part of the circuit is like inside Q. So I'm just going to like remove that part by like applying a partial trace here and here. So that's what I get. Yeah. This is a new region. I get the density matrix over PQ prime, where Q prime is a smaller region than Q, by subtracting the support of this like blue region. Okay. And then Now we are back to this state which doesn't have any circuits. So we're back to this state which is like nice in some sense. But there's a lot of structure in the state, and there's a recovery map, believe me, that maps this state to this like extended state. I can explain why, but provided that you believe that, well, now if you want to go back from here to here, what do you do? Well, this I chose this like enlarged region to be large enough so that it supports the support of this unitary. So now I can just apply this unitary, which is a quantum channel, and yeah, so I get that. And then I can apply a partial trace again, so that I remove now like this part and that part. Yeah. So insofar as you believe that there is a recovery map from this like small region Q prime to a larger region Q double prime, you can indeed complete this circle.
Sorry, what state does the recovery map give?
It's Yeah, so for if you the original state sigma, the reduced density matrix of sigma over PQ prime gets extended to the density matrix of sigma over PQ double prime, and the maximum entropy state gets mapped into another maximum entropy state.
Okay.
That's a non-trivial fact.
And from that, you can get back to the original state.
Right.
Steps. Okay.
Right, right. Yeah. But although that part, this part is a bit involved, intuitively, it's sort of plausible. Because if you start with this, like, what should I say? Let's say the original reference state. That state is nice in a sense that it satisfies the zero condition image information over like various places. And for example, if you choose A to be this like blue region, C to be the rest, and B to be this like buffer region, there it's known due to PETs that there exists some like recovery map from like B to like this BC. And that's a quantum channel. So insofar as you believe that, you can see that indeed you can start with a set of states which has a circuit, and then remove it, and then you can like add them back. And all of this is just a quantum channel. So with that, we finally have understand like why this is true. So basically, it's because we have this entropy difference lemma, which states that for any pair of states, which can be mapped to another state and like moved back by some quantum channel, preserves the entropy difference. And because we figured out this explicit channel, we conclude that the entropy difference is satisfied. Entropy difference is preserved when we compare the states before and after we apply the circuit. And once we remove the circuit, we know that the entropy difference is just a topological entanglement. Okay, so that's the main ideas. So just to summarize, what do we do? So we show that first of all, this spurious topological entanglement entropy must be always non-negative. So that's a fact that was not known before. And a little byproduct of that is that now we have an invariant definition of topological entanglement entropy. And there are some like tools that we developed along the way, like the preservation of the entropy difference, and some like tricks to like make the perturbing circuit to be a specific form. And we think that maybe that could be useful in like a broader context, maybe for like other proving the stability of, let's say, like modular commutators and things like that. But that said, there are some like still leftover open questions. Namely, we think that these like spurious topological entanglement entropy is in some sense fragile. So they appear to require some kind of subsystem symmetry. And it's plausible that as long as you break that symmetry, the spurious contribution gets killed like very fast. While we believe that's true, we can't quite show. So that's another interesting problem. And I think some of these tools are probably applicable to like finite temperature and like higher dimensions, like defects and things like that. Okay, so that's it, and thanks for listening.
Okay, thanks for a great talk. Any questions?
So chiral central charge also has an example?
So, like chiral central charge, let's see. So, let me think. I believe the circuit restriction part is like that part doesn't work. At least we don't know a way to make it work. But if you can make the circuit restriction work, then I think I wouldn't say it's a similar argument, but I think that's the only part that we don't know how to do. So
just like you know, the spurious part, you had a cluster state.
Oh, I see.
Is there
not that I know of. Because at least if you plug in the cluster state, the chiral central charge formula gives zero. So, but there could be other counterexamples in principle.
Say, for example, if you start from a fixed point wave function, say, totally coherent state, and just want to understand, so what are the unit trees you can actually increase TEE without adding any ancillars?
Oh, I see. I'm not sure in the Toric code case. Yeah, it's not clear to me how you can do that in the Toric code case, actually. Yeah.
Even for more general, like any fixed point topological order.
Yeah, so if you don't have any ancillas, it's not clear to me how you can increase it, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
And I guess maybe for other models, can this spurious topological entanglement entropy get as arbitrarily high as it wants?
Let's see. Can it be arbitrarily high? There's like a trivial upper bound in terms of the dimensions of the subsystems, but I'm not sure actually. Beyond that, I'm not sure what we can say. Yeah.
So in 3D, if you have different scheme of partition,
mm-hmm.
you have different author of the TE.
Right, but I think in the end they. At least in the I think in the ground state they give you the same result.
For fractons.
Fractons. Okay, so good. So for fractons, there are some like serious issues with like extending our proof because in fractons the topological entanglement entropy is not invariant under these like deformations of the subsystems, so it's not clear at all like what one can say actually. There's like one more comment actually. So we don't know how to extend this to like Itaya-Preskill type linear combination of entanglement entropy. That's like a still open problem.
Okay, let's next video again.